I'm going to start by asking a very simple question. How's the coffee?
Excellent.
Okay. It's good?
No, it's excellent.
Does it taste good?
Yes.
It's part of the chair. Does it taste good? Hi.
Hello.
Does it...
Hello.
Welcome. Hello. Does it taste good?
Hello. Tastes excellent.
But it doesn't taste good. This is my question for you.
See, my posting brought someone.
There you go. This it doesn't taste good. Why do I mean it doesn't taste good?
It's bitter.
It's bitter.
That's good.
Ah, that's the question, right? What? It doesn't. I mean, unless you add sugar to your coffee. I don't either.
I do.
I learned to do without. You know what I'm saying? What happened was.
Sometimes you need that bitter.
Oh, so I used to on Pesach. I used to add sugar, and then on Pesach the problem was the Splenda that I had isn't kosher to Pesach. Because it has kidney or whatever.
So I
went cold turkey on Pesach. I would have to go without. You know what I'm saying? And thank God they had half and half. So then after Pesach, one year after Pesach, I said, one second, if I like the coffee enough without it, what do I need the chemicals for? So we say it's good, even though it's bitter.
Yeah.
So what's good about it? Why do we voluntarily, like, is it just that it's good because I imagine the caffeine flowing through my veins and I'm... No, it's good.
Yeah.
Well, but it's bitter. It's not good. You voluntarily, if I give you, I don't know, you know, enjoy this...
But sometimes you have a craving for a particular taste.
Every morning.
And you need... It's like when you're pregnant, you know what I mean? Well, no, you don't.
But it is good. It is good.
No, like,
no,
when you're expecting and you have... Triplets craved coal.
Coal?
Coal. I used to eat chalk and coal.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Seriously.
I've read that. It's like a deficiency.
It's a deficiency,
right?
Yeah.
In the blood.
Sounds disgusting. And okay,
no,
really sounds disgusting.
No,
so I wanna. So obviously, I bring this up not for nothing. I bring this up for educational reasons. She thinks I'm talking about the coffee. Didn't I really just? I already started this year. Okay, and because we're going to talk about bitterness in the parsha and the benefits of bitterness, and obviously an amazing educational lesson that Kadosh Baruch Hu teaches the Jewish people. So we're going to start at Parsha B'Shalach. As obviously the highlight of the parsha is Shirat Hayam, is Az Yashir. Right, the amazing salvation. Oh yeah, you still remember it? Pretty much, yeah. Okay, I often say it's interesting. One of the things, the benefits that boys have over girls is boys are first to lane, and whatever you lane as a child and even as a teenager, you remember. It just stays with you. You know, when you lane and you know when you're older, you don't really remember. But what are you gonna do?
When I was in Takimoni, we learned the trop.
The girls do. I think there's a benefit to women to learning trop. Just for knowing it.
I remember to talk with my parents and I learned.
No, the trop is very valuable
it's
to learn even just...
The trop is punctuation.
Correct.
It's punctuation, but I don't remember anything.
Okay. So we're going to start on Perek Tetvav, but I'm not going to do Shiret Hayam today. Maybe one of these years I'll do it, or some of it. We're going to start on Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Kafbet, the story that immediately follows the Shiret Hayam. There's much more there, Bianca, if you want.
Okay. And also in the office. There are more in the
office. And we're also going to talk about what just happened. Bianca said thank you, but she just listening. Meaning different people learn in different ways. And a good teacher,
really?
100%, what do you mean? I'm like very into this. A good teacher, right, there's visual learning, there's auditory learning, there's something called, yes, experiential learning. What's the last one?
You're actually visual one style.
Oh, stop it. Okay, now you're the one
talking. Visual
learning. I said visual, auditory.
Experiential.
Yeah. No.
And there are many.
And 21 others. Give me two more.
Of learning styles.
Yeah, 21.
Tactile.
Okay.
Aesthetic.
So,
smell,
I guess. Yeah, today we're going to learn an amazing lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought to
musical.
Jewish people. Right, that, and we're going to see that it's you know, one of the things that I don't know if you noticed that I do this, but I learned from a teacher, the Nazrieli, Dr. Eliyah. He said, but whenever you teach, the best way to introduce something is to try to draw your audience in. I mean, you always want to draw them in. He called it a motivatia, you know what I'm saying? So you could start by saying, okay, you start the shiur by saying, we're now on to Perek Tetvav Pasuk Chafet, and we learn the Chumash. Or we could start by saying, oh wow, you notice that the coffee is bitter. Why is that good? You know what I'm saying? You're saying, well, what the heck does that have to do with what does it have to do with Parashat HaShavua? You know, and it gets you a little, it draws you into the material. So educationally, you always want to draw somebody into the material, if you can do it, and then try to translate the material into something that's relevant. Give me a little inside baseball. I probably shouldn't tell you all my secrets. But, you'll know, I try to do it as much as I can. And we're going to see that here today. Vayasa Moshe et Yisrael miyam suf. Moshe vayasa, who he see otam.
He traveled them.
He traveled them from the Yam Suf. Okay. Vayetzu al midbar Shur. And they went to the desert of Shur. Vayelchu shloshet yamim b'midbar v'lo matzu mayim. They went 3 days in the desert, and they did not find water. Okay. The most interesting word in the Pasuk, obviously, is vayasa. We did this for Rashi last year. I know we for a fact that we did it, but I'm going to mention it anyway. Not for a fact we did it because I underlined it. But okay, I'm going to mention it anyway because it's an important Rashi. What does it mean that Moshe traveled them? Moshe almost pushed them away, forced them along the way. So says Rashi the following. Hisyan Baal Korcham. See where I am in the Rashi? Mm-hmm. Right? He moved them Baal Korcham against their will. She'atru Mitzrayim et Susehem betachshitei Zahav v'kesef v'avanim tovot. That the Egyptians, for whatever reason, when they were going to battle, you know, instead of adorning their tanks with armor, they adorned them with
jewels.
I guess that was, it was the show of importance and power that they had. And when they all drowned in the Yam Suf, and the Jewish people, like at the end of the Yam Suf, when the water settled, right, the everything started to wash up on shore. All the gold and the silver, says the Midrash. Ugdola haita bizat hayam mi bizrat Mitzrayim. You know all that wealth and power, all the wealth that they got in Egypt when they borrowed from the Egyptians? They made more money. They collected more wealth at the Yam Suf than they did when they were in Egypt originally. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? I mean, they emptied out Egypt from all its wealth. There was more wealth at the Yam Suf after the destruction of the Egyptian army, says Rashi. And they, you know, whatever, you know, when the Jewish people were celebrating, they sang Az Yashir, and all of a sudden somebody noticed. Hey, look!
They're dying.
Money! You know what I'm saying? Look, it's washing up on the shore. And then you can imagine yourself, a whole crowd, everybody starts, you know, running towards the jewels and the diamonds and starts...
That's why Jews are diamond dealers.
That's why.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? But you could picture now, just picture the scene. Everybody's like, you know, digging into the sand, and you're shaking your head. Why are you shaking your head?
I also feel
like
that. What? It upsets me too. Like, here we're on this great spiritual journey. We're
correct.
Going from like the lowest point, and it feels like
we haven't done anything.
We're standing there, like thanking Hashem. The next minute, we're
right. We're all like Shiru Hashem, and the singing and the dancing
from Egypt, and right. We have Hashem taking care of us.
And we're unhappy.
And we're like,
it didn't say unhappy. It didn't say unhappy.
You can't eat diamonds.
What?
Not
it didn't say unhappy, but you can just picture the scene. Hard. They're all singing, cool. They're all davening, and they're all religious. On the spiritual high, and some guy goes, Zoom. Hey!
Buddy.
Gold! Where?
No, but it's easy to misunderstand, perhaps, Hashem's original commandment to them to go take stuff from the Mitzrayim. They went, like, before they left Mitzrayim, they took stuff from the Mitzrayim. So maybe it's something that they thought Hashem was saying, hey, you know, be aware of this element also.
All right.
And then they, like...
I just find it bizarre, not bizarre, I find it hard to understand Hashem's, like... What?
Well, first of all, right, does jewelry and gold normally wash up ashore?
No, but what are we going to
say?
It would sink. So then, obviously, it's a midrash. It's clearly a midrash, okay? And what's the purpose of the midrash? What's the point of the midrash? According to the midrash, why did the stuff wash up ashore? Like, why would God intentionally wash up all this money? What?
Is it a test?
Of course it's a test. And? They failed the test. Right. The test was, after the Yam Suf, are you still interested in the
Such
money?
Such a dramatic thing, and show me the money.
It's like how we're singing thankfully. And then...
You don't know if that's fair? I mean, the question is...
I think that's fair. I mean, he did, again, I say it again, he did turn them on to this awareness of materialism.
Didn't he, like, give them a ton of money? Like, they emptied out the wealth of Egypt.
Yeah, what was the purpose?
What are you going to do with it?
What was the purpose of that?
Yeah.
So, you know, you could say that it was like a piece of chocolate. You know, that they couldn't have just a little taste and that.
Really?
Yeah.
A little taste? They
It wasn't a.
It says,
Allah had kama v'chama.
Vayinatzlu et Mitzrayim.
Exactly, even more so.
They're loaded down with the wealth of Egypt. Egypt is a major power.
How much can they carry?
But I don't understand either.
Well, how much is enough? First of all, let's go back just very briefly. Ask the question: what was the purpose of? What's the purpose of? Why did God want them? Just very briefly, why did God want them to have the money before they left Egypt? Well, who cares? What do they need money for? No, it's not. It's a very obvious question. No, not for the Mishkan.
The Midrash says it's for the Mishkan.
The Midrash says in the future, but
it's status.
Correct. Status for who?
For them.
As compensation.
No, forget the compensation. They needed. They couldn't go out as slaves. Right, if you I didn't do this. Maybe next year, remind me. I'll do this. I mean, you have to be a human being. When you leave, are you leaving as a human being? What's your status? What are you wearing? How do you view yourself? You know what I'm saying? Are you running away? Are you, or are they making you leave? But nonetheless, you're still, you know what I'm saying? You're still a significant person. There's clear purpose in God. I heard a shiur last Shabbat about it. Why? What was the money so important? But the money clearly is important. It's important for their own psyche, it's important for their own development, it's important for a lot of different things.
But psychologically, like, if someone has no money and then you put them in a situation with lots of money, they lose the money.
What are they going to use it for? They went to the desert.
I know, that's my point. Like, what was the point of that? It wouldn't have been better.
You know, psychologically. It's interesting, when Moshe told them to take the money, the Midrash says that they said, we don't want the money, just get us out of here. Like, if you say somebody getting out of prison, they say, oh, we'll give you, like, you know, beautiful, I don't need that, just get me out of here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but clearly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them, and even from the Brit Ben HaPetarim, when Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, your children will be slaves, Eretz Olahem, V'achreichen, you two, very good, V'chush Gadol. They'll go out, V'chush Gadol. That was part of the deal. It was part of the original agreement. Right? And the Jewish people had to take the money. But now, after the Yamsuf, clearly, for some reason, there's this failure. Let's read on in Rashi. One second, I just want to finish the Rashi. It says, Rashi says, and he gave them. Okay. One second. Shneamar, it says, to raise the hab nasalach im nukudat hakasef. Right? To raise the hab, they made pillars of gold with silver. Rashi finishes. Lefikach, therefore, hutzrach lahasiam baal korcham. It says Vayasa Moshe et Bnei Yisrael Miyamsu, right? Moshe Vayasa. He traveled them. He forced them. He took them away. Pushed them away from the Yamsuf. Meaning what?
Trying to.
They were in the money. They were like, you know, digging. They were like, where can I find something else? Moshe's like, okay, time to go. Yeah, Moshe, we're coming. We're coming. At some point, Moshe had to say,
no, now.
That's it. No. Let's go. Not a nice picture. Right. Well, that's another question. Meaning, on the one hand, they were on a high spiritual level. The Midrash says that you know, the very famous Midrash says, Ra'ata shivcha alayam ashalo ra'a yicheskel ben buzi. Meaning that even the lowest maidservant at Kriyat Yamsu had visions of prophecy, had prophetic spirituality that the prophet Yicheskel didn't have. So they were on this incredible level. One thing I always try to emphasize is, true religiosity and true spirituality never comes from moments of great inspiration, from shocking moments of inspiration. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
I mean, a person has a powerful experience, an incredible experience, at such a high, and they come off that experience, a great shiur, a great Shabbat, a life-altering experience. And before you know it, like, they go back. Why? Because those events, while they are powerful, what? They're not meaningful. They're not long-term meaningful. They can put you on a path, but they're not fundamentally meaningful. You know, like fireworks, shocking experiences are shocking for the moment, but then you always just sort of return to where you were. What? To where you were, to your equilibrium. You're right, the language of not meaningful is not true. They are meaningful, but they're not long-lasting and impactful.
It's hard to carry them.
That's right.
But that's our
work. It's human nature.
Yeah, right.
It's human nature.
Meaning,
just give an example that we all know, right? A person, you know, goes on a crash diet, I got to lose 20 pounds, so they starve themselves for 2 weeks, and they lose 15 pounds. Okay, odds are. Okay. Yeah, I get 25. Right, that's just human nature. Right? What's the only way to really lose weight? And keep it off. And keep it off. I pointed to the. The only way is to live a balanced, healthy lifestyle where you're going to be a healthy person. Of course, we're not very good at that, but we don't want to do it, but that's the only way. And the shocking and the shock and awe, as shocking and awing as it is it fundamentally lasting? You know? Because shock and awe is easy in a way. It's easy to starve yourself because, oh, it's going to end. Whereas, you know, I at some point I was on Sugar Busters. I was like very, very like machmir. I was really machmir, and I was much healthier. And we do it to a large degree now, but people would say to me, are you going to do this for the rest of your life? And like the idea of doing something for the rest of your life is
too long term.
Yeah, it was like, that's a lot. So I would say, I don't know about the rest of my life, but I'm pretty sure that today I'm going to do it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, really. I turned Sugar Busters into like alcoholism. It's like really sad. But okay.
But I think that's what it is. It's addiction.
What?
It might not stay at that level, but it has filtered into your life.
Without a doubt, it's filtered into my life.
That's kind of the.
Right, but it, little by little, like you add this and I had that, and it's like. And it's not so good. Okay. So then Moshe forced them to leave, and they went to Midbar Shur, and they went 3 days of Lo Matzumayim. So now I'm going to read the rest of the parsha. It's a very short parsha, and then we're going to come back and ask some questions. Vayavo Marata. They came to Mara. Okay, there's a beautiful Rashi. I'm not going to read it now, but it's a grammatical Rashi. Rashi goes into the whole grammar of Marata. That the hey at the end of Marata is in place of a lamed of limara. Just so you're aware, Vayavo Marata. They came. It's as if the Torah said Vayavo limara. And Rashi gives a number of examples. Okay, they came to Mara. They couldn't drink the water from there. Why? Ki marim heim. It was bitter water. Al ken kara shema Mara. Why did they call the place bitter? Because the water was bitter. Bitter water.
Thank you.
I don't think you meant that. Okay. Vayilonu ha'am al Moshe lemor manishta. And the nation, vayilonu, it's a very important word. They complained al Moshe. On Moshe. What did they not complain?
To Moshe.
What would have been a better word for them to use?
Le Moshe.
Well, meaning, what would have been better for them to have done? Well, forget the, let's try to get away from the word Vayilonu. Vayidabru el Moshe lemor. Manishteh. Like, you know, like is their complaint illegitimate?
Absolutely.
No, I mean, they're thirsty.
Oh. Yeah.
Right. Like, they need water. They legitimately need water. So they should have come to Moshe and said, Moshe, we need water.
But in fairness to them, after 3 days, they're dehydrated and not thinking straight. And so they weren't so keen.
The real question is, were they really 3 days without water?
Well, it seems that.
Were they really 3 days without water? Or were they 3 days, meaning have they last drunk 3 days? Or they hadn't found water for 3 days? You know what I'm saying?
Could be that they had water.
They had stores.
Of course they had water. I mean, they just left the, I assume they had, you mean the Midrash says, where they get, at the Yamsuf, the water was sweet. So they were, you know, like according to all these Midrashim,
like
they had
filling
their canteens with water, right? They had plenty of water. So you could last for sure. But as you see your water going down, and you're in the desert, so it's going down and down and down and down, and then you're wondering.
So it's
like,
very anticipatory,
you know,
panic.
Probably they're running out of water. I don't think they are hallucinating from thirst.
Okay.
And
heat.
Somebody's stealing her toys.
Like, okay. I always tell my cousin, it's not what you say, it's how you say it.
Very good. That's exactly the point. The Chazal pick up on this right away. Vayilonu al Moshe. They complained against the Moshe, and they said, Manishteh. Vayitzak el Hashem. Moshe cried out to God. Vayorehu Hashem eitz. God, how do they translate? It's a very important word. How do they translate the word Vayorehu?
And Hashem showed him
a tree. Interesting. Fascinating. That's the way the scroll translates it. You have that? What do you have? He showed him a tree. How would you say, and God showed him a tree? What word would it be? Lehar ot. How would you?
Like from a teacher.
Very good. Excellent. How would you spell lehar ot?
With an aleph.
With an aleph. And the word would not be vayorehu. Laharot, again, you understand? The word laharot means to teach.
To teach, to teach.
Okay. And the word leharot
to show,
is to show. From the word lirot, from the root of resh aleph hey. But it's not that.
No.
I'm not making this up. This is from the Midrash, from the Farshim. It's vayorehu. Yeah. So I'm just fascinated that Rashi translates it as, and he showed him a tree, but we'll see what it means. Okay?
Not Rashi, the scroll.
The scroll, thank you. He showed them the tree. Vayashlech el hamayim, vayim teku hamayim. Moshe threw the tree into the water, and the water became sweet. Sham sam lo, chok umishpat, visham nisahu. There he placed for him law and statute, and there nisahu, he tested him. How's that for some vague language? Okay. There he placed for him chok umishpat, and there he tested him. There you go. What? Okay. And there he tested him. Who tested whom? What is this chok umishpat? What the heck is going on, basically? Next. Vayomer, God said. Im shamo atishma lekol Hashem elokecha. If you will hear the voice of Hashem your God. Vahayashar be'inav ta'aseh. And you do that which is righteous in his eyes. Vahazanta lemitzvotav. Bishamarta kol chukav. Hazanta lehazin. You listen,
okay, with,
right, to his commandments, and you guard all of his statutes. Kol machala asher samti b'mitzrayim lo asim alecha. All of the machala, the diseases that I placed in Egypt, I will not place on you.
I.e. the makot, or diseases.
Diseases, makot. Good question. Why? Ki ani Hashem rofecha. For I am the Lord your
healer,
doctor. I was looking at the doctor. Okay. Find the Lord. What the heck is going on? And this is, by the way, this is the first religious experience that the Jewish people have coming out of, not including the Yamsu. This is the first experience that they have only as a nation. Meaning until now, they're running away from the Egyptians, miraculous salvation. They traveled 3 days. So obviously in those 3 days, things have kind of calmed down. So the first question we have to ask ourselves is why are the Jewish people thirsty? Why are they thirsty? There's no water. But then we have to ask ourselves another question.
The cure doesn't seem to fit the ailment.
Well, why we have to, the second question is,
why is there no
water? Why is there no water? And the answer is clear, because God didn't give them water. Right? It's fair to assume that when the Jewish people left Egypt, there was a plan. Right? And part of the plan would be that they need what to drink. Right? And as we see throughout the rest of the time, what did they drink from? They drink from this amazing well. This amazing, it's called the Be'er Miriam, according to the Midrash. This Be'er went with them, and wherever they went, they had wonderful flowing water. But they didn't have it then. For 3 days, they don't have water. Don't get me wrong, that's a lot of time. Right? And as they're running out of water, their complaint or their concern is quite a legitimate one. What are we going to drink? So this is clearly an intentional lesson. What's the lesson? What does God want to teach the Jewish people, and how does he do it? Okay, what's going on here? Now remember also, we mentioned last week, the Kriyat Yamsuf, God did not free the Jewish people in order to set them free. What did he free the Jewish people?
To
receive the Torah. Are they at all ready to receive the Torah?
No.
Right. This is a very, very important, fascinating question. How do you transform a band of slaves?
Create a need.
How do you transform a band of slaves from a group of people who really, I mean, we all know what the Chazal say about them. They were at the Memtet Sharei Tumah. They were at the 49th level of defilement. They were, as you might imagine, they were debased. They were low. They were, you know, very difficult to imagine. You know, don't think of Klal Yisrael like you see in the Midrash says with the pictures that they all had the long beards and they were all these pious people. Right? Let's not kid ourselves. Right? After a certain number or period of time of being treated a certain way in a pagan society, you can imagine what they were like and what their attitudes were. How do you transform these people in the period of a month and a half to people that are ready to receive the Torah? It's not a simple matter.
Experientially.
Very good. Right. So we're as I led you on. This is a and what can't you do first? What's the thing that God cannot do right away?
Start teaching them.
Correct.
Preaching.
Absolutely right.
Hmm?
Stop preaching.
Stop preaching.
Okay, everybody gather around. I want to give you some rules. All right, we're going to have to do X, you have to do Y, you have to do Z. You
know, kids, you start off.
Yeah, but how is this a teaching method? You know, they complain and then he gives them what they need?
Yes.
Is that good?
What?
Is that a good thing? They complain and then he gives them what they want?
They're building.
Well, here's the question. Well, what was the intent? This is the question. What was the original intent? And what was the result? Meaning their complaining is inappropriate, Chazal say. Their Vayilonu is inappropriate. But clearly the need is engineered.
Right.
So in the ideal, they would have said...
The beginning of davening, which is their first...
In terms of, like, just explaining that giving them wealth from the beginning makes sense. Because it's like encouraging them at the beginning stage. It's like you give a trigger, just like you said. You say about the coffee to draw them in.
Right.
The wealth that Hashem gave them in the beginning, it makes sense that... Like, you could say compensation from the Egyptians because that would make them feel like they were worth something. And then to keep them going, and then also that them complaining on Moshe, like they've never had a leader that they could go to say, excuse me, we're all thirsty, and he'd say, sure, I'll go get you water.
Right.
This is the first time they've ever had a Jewish leader who actually cares about what their needs as opposed to cares about them.
What's the goal of this whole show? Obviously. What's the goal of the show for the people? What do they want to come out with in the end?
Nation building. And
nation building, meaning it's like a whole, like a little gibush experience?
I think it's layered. Like, I think there's lots of layers.
Okay. Well, what's the main one, if you would say? The goal? Right. After this, like, you always have to have, like, a goal when you have a program. The learner will. Like, the Jewish people will. At the end of this experience, the what? What's the relationship? Very good. The Jewish people will have a relationship. At the end of this... What?
Using with the Torah
okay.
as a tool.
Wait, one second. Not at Har Sinai. Just this little water experience. A little at the end. At the end of the water show, at the end of the water thing, the Jewish people will? Okay, good. Have a sense of dependence upon God. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So let's see how it's done. Okay? It's very interesting. I want to look at a couple more Rashis. It's very interesting. They're very important for us to understand this. Chaf Dalet. Vayilonu ha'am ha'moshe le'mor ma'nishteh. The word language of Vayilonu, Rashi says Vayilonu Lashon Nif'alhu. What's Nif'al?
Passive.
It's Nif'al is passive, but he gets even more. V'chein etargum Lashon Nif'alhu. V'itra'amu. V'itra'amu. V'chein Lashon Tluna. La'seiv adibor el adam. Mitlonen. How's that conjugated? Mitlonen. Mitro'em.
Reflexive.
Reflexive. This is interesting. Rashi says, every complaint is reflexive upon me. I'm mitlonen. It's not good enough to me. You know, it's a very interesting grammatical comment that when you're complaining, you're really talking more. You're not. When I complain about the dinner is not good, like dinner was terrible. It was great.
For
when
me.
Dinner was like, what?
For you, for me.
Right. Meaning, well, who am I really complaining about?
Yourself.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Okay. Next Rashi, Sham Samlo and Chafhe. It's a very important Rashi because this is the Chazal take this as Pashup Shat. Bimara Natan Lehem Miktsat Parshiot Shel Torah Sheet Asku Behem. Sham Sam Lo Choku Mishpat. What happened at Mara? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't just give them sweet water. Rather, after he gave them the water, he said, oh yes, now that we're all here drinking, there are some things I have to tell you. Right? What are they? I want to tell you about some initial commandments that God is going to give the Jewish people. Choku Mishpat. This is what he said. Sam Sham Lo, he placed them in Choku Mishpat, he gave them mitzvot. What are the mitzvot? It says the following. Shabbat, upara aduma, v'dinim. Shabbat, we know. What's para aduma? Purity and impurity, right? And dinim.
Civil laws.
The Midrash says the following. There are a number of different Midrashim. Different are obligations, okay? So the Midrash says, chok is Shabbat. So Rashi, by the way, takes one Midrashic interpretation. I'm going to give you a couple more. Mishpat is kibud av va'em. Interesting. We have Yeliezer Modi Omer, Chok is Arayot. Okay? Arayot meaning?
Gilui
Arayot, sexual propriety. Okay? And Mishpat is Dinei Anasim, Dinei Knasot, Dinei Chavalot, Dinim, laws. So different interpretations, but according to all interpretations, right? Another one says that they had 10 mitzvot they got at Marah. The 7 mitzvot B'nei Noach, And then Shabbat, Kibud Avaim, and Dinim. So you have like, there's like, Shabbat always fits in, and then some say Parah Adumah, Dinim always fits in, so is it Parah Adumah, is it Kibud Avaim? It's a very interesting machloket about like what the Rabbana and what Chazal thought were, what's the core of like Judaism when you just start somebody off?
No, but it's also
like, you know, like what's most important?
It's not just what's most important. Parah Adumah has chronological significance because they need to be in order to bring the next Korban Pesach. So the question is, where along the way is there another indication that other mitzvot were given? You know, before.
Right, meaning so you need it in order to give the korbanot.
Not for Pesach, sorry. They need it for the
Mishkan. But that's only if you assume, the Mishkan was originally planned.
Yes. Well, so this, I would say that opinion assumes that.
Okay.
That opinion that it's Parah Adumah assumes that the Mishkan was
planned. Obviously, it's fodder for discussion. It's very good fodder for discussion if you take this list and ask your children what, if you, like, it's great. Like, if you had to teach Jewish people mitzvot starting from scratch, what would you start with? What would you pick? Like, pick three. And then you could bring in Rashi and then have a discussion. Why did Chazal think they picked different than you? What, you know what I'm saying? This is a nice fodder for discussion at the Shabbat table. Okay? But, and obviously Chazal deal with this discussion about why specifically these three, but I really don't want to get into that because it could become... What? There's a midrash, Gemara in Sanhedrin, Nun Vav. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Nun Vav says... 10 mitzvot, Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach, plus the additional 3.
But that makes no sense, because didn't they already have Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach?
I don't think they had anything.
No. They were b'nei Noach. Everybody had
The Midrash says the Jewish people kept three things that kept them Jewish.
Yeah, I know.
What are the three things?
Name
Jewish names. What?
Language and dress.
Language and dress. Meaning what? What kind of Jews were they?
Surface Jews.
Very good. Excellent. They were cultural Jews. They liked bagels. They liked lox, matzo ball soup. They had Jewish names. And they dress like Jews. That's pretty much it.
Just resonates so much today.
Yeah, it resonates so strongly when you see that midrash. It's so powerful. Okay. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, he sweetened the water. And through the sweetening of the water, he said to them, see how God gave us the sweetening of the water? Therefore, I'm going to give you, this doesn't happen by itself, but rather it only happens through the keeping of the Torah. Now, obviously, the idea of water in the Torah, in the Midrash, in Chazal, in Jewish thought, Mayim, right, is an allusion to the Torah, right? There's a pasuk in somewhere, Hoy kol tzameh mechula mayim, right? You are thirsty, go to the water, ein mayim el Torah, right? Torah is considered mayim. Why, by the way, would Torah be considered would be considered equal to water?
Why
right, I can't live without it. That's exactly right. The water is the
non-Jews.
What?
Then it's not fair to the non-Jews.
Well, they have Torah, but it's on a limited, much more limited level. They have their mitzvot, right?
Not Torah.
Of course, it's Torah. The 70 shivus ben Noach is huge if they want to keep the Torah, without a doubt. So it's not fair to us. The Kohanim have more mitzvot than us.
It's not an issue of fairness or not fairness, but I don't think that you could say that the Kohanim have the Torah.
They have. What?
They have their obligations.
I've often said that I think that like one thing that we, because we're so inward focused, especially in the Gola, we're so inward focused. Like we almost rob the non-Jews of the Torah. That, you know, it didn't happen that often, but every now and then someone would come to my office and be really interested in Judaism, like a non-Jew, because they're reading the Bible. Like I once had a guy, unbelievable story. I was in One Stop Kosher, which is like, you know, the meat store, the main meat store in Detroit. And I see a guy loading up on meat. I mean, like, the cart is full of meat. So what does that tell you? It tells you that he's from out of town. And, you know, he came in for his usual trek, right, to stock up. So I'm the rabbi in town or whatever, one of the rabbis. So I come up to him and I say, oh, I don't recognize you. Where are you from? He says, I'm up from, like, you know, the north of Michigan. He drove, like, 500 miles or 200 miles to come get meat. I said, wow, I have a synagogue. You're welcome to come if you're ever around on Shabbat. He says, thank you so much, Rabbi, whatever. Calls me up and says, we're around where I'm staying with my aunt or uncle. Can I come on such and such a Shabbat? He comes. And he and his sons are sitting in the front row, teenage sons. And there's something off. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have a sense. Like, something doesn't make sense. So I say, oh, thank you so much for coming. Come meet me in my office, like, during the week when you have a chance. He comes in. Turns out, he's not Jewish at all. But he read the Bible and there's laws, and you know, you pick up what you can on the internet. You could read a lot on the internet. But it's so interesting, like if you had to decide what is true, authentic Judaism from the internet, what would you come out with? You know, so here he is, he's driving hundreds of miles to buy kosher meat at One Stop Kosher. He's not Jewish. You know what I'm saying? And there's this yearning and this thirst. And I think I said this arena once. So, like, I often had this desire to, like, we have shul on Shabbat for the Jews, and then we'd have, like, Shtef shul on Sunday for the non-Jews. Because there's so many non-Jews that are yearning for spirituality and connection to God. They don't buy into Christianity fully, but they're looking for a connection. And the reason I never even thought of doing it was because my show would have fired me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not even, like...
It's not on the radar.
Not on the radar. But it almost, like, it's an embarrassment where you're going to have a thing for non-Jews. Why is that? Aren't we supposed to bring spirituality?
It's embarrassing because there's so many Jews who aren't connected to her. Why, isn't that more of a priority?
Well, I'm offering them services on Shabbat. I have plenty of classes. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a rabbi I know. His name is Rabbi Haman. And when he was in Calgary, he opened I think it was like a Noahide, like, you know, he wrote a whole book, and he was, like, sought out as a speaker. And he was for Noahides. There are a lot of Noahides who want to keep the Torah. They want to know what
are
they supposed to do.
Did he write that book, the Noahide laws?
Oh, he wrote one of them. I don't know. He wrote a book about that. Anyway, so... It's for the whole world. It's not just for the Jewish people. Anyway, so let's go on. Vayomer says, what are these called? We'll just do a few more Rashis and we'll go to some other Mepharshim. Okay? How did, a more important question, how did Moshe make the water sweet?
Through an
age. Through a tree. Good. Is that a miracle?
Yeah.
Really?
Where did he find the tree in the middle?
It's really interesting. Why didn't Moshe say, God has instructed me to wave my arms, abracadabra, shazam, and the water will become sweet. They all went to the water. You couldn't drink it. It was so bitter you couldn't drink it. And then Moshe should just wave his arms. God didn't tell him to do that. He told him, take a tree, vayorehu eitz. What is the eitz? What is the eitz? Eitz chayimi. Correct. Very good. Okay. It's like there's so much powerful imagery in this story. Okay. And he showed him a tree and he said, throw the tree in the bitter water. So obviously you would assume that this tree is what kind of tree? Right, sugarcane. It's great. It's beautiful. It's tremendous. Says Rashi. What does Rashi say? It. What's the H? Rashi doesn't say it. The Midrash says the following. There's a machloket about what kind of tree it was. Eze Eitz. I'm reading the Midrash. Rabbi Yeshua says H shel Arava. Right? Is the Arava known as a sweet tree? No, there was not. Rabbi Elazar Hamodai Amar. Ze eitz shel zayit, olive tree. He says, "She'en lecha mar yoter mizayit." There is no more bitter tree than the olive tree. Rabbi Yishuv ben Korcha Omer, no, ze eitz shel har dufni. It's even more bitter. Okay, so they're arguing about what's the most bitter tree that they could possibly imagine that this was the tree that Moshe threw in.
So that could have eitz written on Moshe.
So meaning the tree that Moshe threw in was not a sweet tree. According to everybody, they argue about what the tree was, but everybody agrees that it was a bitter tree. They're only arguing about how bitter was it. Was it really bitter, extremely bitter, or unbelievably bitter? So then you're left with the question.
To make it even more of an ace.
Right. How? Well, then if the point is to make it more of an ace, why are you throwing in the tree?
So they could relate.
You could relate to, he took a bitter tree and he threw it in and made it even more bitter?
Because it's more, it's real. It's not like hocus pocus in the
okay,
head.
Okay.
It's a real thing that they know that this is a tree.
So the Midrash wonders about that. This Midrash Tanchuma, at Motzeh, you find, Kishabala Mara, when they came to Mara, and they couldn't drink Mayim Mi Mara, they couldn't drink the bitter water.
There's a tree in the desert anyway, it's another
matter, but anyway. No, but the way you know is the desert isn't always Sahara Desert. It's wilderness desert. So there's stuff there. They came to a watering hole. So there are bushes, there are trees there. I don't know if you find it, what? Right. Right, they came to a place where there's natural water, but it was bitter. Okay? So, Vaya Moshe Savor, Moshe himself thought, Shakarish Baruch Hu Omer, Shiashlich Sham Dvash, Udveila. Moshe said, you know, take a fig tree or some nice thing and it would all, you know, naturally sweeten the water. And it says, no. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe, Ein Darki Kimidat Basar Badam. No, I don't work that way. I'm not like human beings. Achshav Ata Tzarich Lilmod, Shinemar, you have to learn. What was that word that we said that talked about learning? Vayorehu. The word vayorehu is not that he showed him a tree. God taught Moshe about the tree. What did he teach him? Vayorehu lo ne'emar. It doesn't say vayorehu, it's vayorehu. Good pickup. Horehu bidrachab. God showed Moshe his ways. What was the tree? Everybody says it was a bitter tree. Okay? So basar badam, human beings, bimatok mirapei tamar. How do we make bitter things sweet? How do we make our coffee sweet? We add splenda, right? Or sugar. It depends on your poison. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu bimar mirape et tamar. God sweetens bitter with bitter.
Sometimes we need bitter.
Sometimes we need bitter. He sweetens the bitter with bitter. How does that make sense? So you can understand it in two possible ways. The first way is to understand that God's ways are different than human beings. God's ways are supernatural. God is his own way, and it's a nes. The Midrash really says that this is a nes betoch nes. But it's interesting that God used a natural way in order to find the nes. But there's another way of understanding it as well. What does it mean that God, that in God's ways, the way of making bitter sweet is by adding more bitter? Yeah. I know you're going to say what Kliyakar says, so which is good. It's fine.
Just like in order to make a person better, he gives them sorrows.
In order to appreciate what she does for them.
That's not what he says. That's not what she said.
I mean,
she said in order to appreciate good, you have to have bad, because then the good is better. Is that what you meant?
To elevate a person, you have to give them sorrow. Unfortunately, that's the way.
Why is it unfortunate?
Well,
you don't want to go.
One second.
From our
okay, I actually did. That's not what Kliyakar says, and I was thinking a different way. And I saw this. Okay, I thought of it's not. Wow, we got a whole walking line. Very nice. Okay. When I saw this, I wrote on my chumash. I said. There's a lot of truth to this. You want real sweetness in life. If you want, like, there's something called fake sweetness. There's Splenda, which is totally artificial, right? And utterly meaningless.
Or Silan, which is the real deal.
Or even, let's say, sugar. Sugar is temporarily sweet, but what's bad about sugar, Arlen? What isn't bad about sugar?
What is good about sugar?
Right. It's sweet. Tastes good, but...
But it could be harmful to you.
Right, I mean,
in excess.
Right, it's, in a small amount, it's very good. But you're like, you have, I mean, what they say about sugar, right? It gives you energy, but it dissipates very quickly. It's not sustained. Okay, so what do you have to do to eat, to have sustained energy? Whole grains. Right, eat your greens. They don't taste good.
Kale.
Right, they don't, I'm sorry, but, you know, like, don't get me wrong, but everybody will agree that white pasta tastes better than whole grain pasta. You know, you just get used to it. But, no, it admit the truth, at least.
No, but doesn't taste like it. I haven't eaten a lot of it, but I think that's what you're accustomed to.
Correct. Okay. In life, right, real sweetness comes not from the fun, not from the sugar of life, but from the toil. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll give you a personal example. The most joyous experience of my year thus far was we had a little siyum, and my son made a siyum on he learned Seder Zerayim by himself. He did it all on his own. I didn't prod him. I didn't learn with him even. He did it on his own. And the reason that was the most joyous to me was because it wasn't. It's not something like it's something that comes from. From trying to educate your child and inculcate in them a certain sense of value over a long period of time. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right?
It's not that one shot thing that you're trying to
do. Right. If I had learned with him, that would have been nice.
Mm-hmm. You were reaping what
right?
you sowed.
If we had learned once, that would have been nice. But the fact that he did it over an extended period of time and he himself did it, it's a result of how like great he is. I'm proud of him. But also of just a long period of hard work. You know what I'm saying? Everybody knows that things that I the example I used to give in Detroit is I had this, in front of my house, I built this deck. I built this like little porchy thing. So like Rena, like for whatever reason, she liked to sit in the front of the house, not in the back of the house because the kids were playing in the front. And so I decided I was going to build a deck.
There's nobody in the back of the house. All the neighbors are in the front of the
right.
house.
Right. So I built this deck that you never used afterwards.
No, I did use it.
You did use it?
Sure.
And I loved that deck. I loved it far more than if I had hired somebody else to build it for me. Because Like, it's meaningful. The things that you do yourself just are naturally meaningful. And life is like that. That the bitterness, right, the toil and the exertion itself brings about sweetness. And it's much more sweet than anything that you could have by just receiving, by just getting, by having somebody give it to you. And there's a lot of depth in that message, a lot of power in the message, you know. And so the Kliyakrit says that in terms of learning Torah. He has a very interesting question. He starts with the question, he's like, why did they have the whole lesson in the first place? So he quotes Rashi, and he says, you have Kliyakrit?
Yeah.
The second paragraph on Chaf Bet. I don't know if you have paragraphs. On Pesach Chaf Bet, it goes back to the beginning.
No,
you don't have the same version. Okay? He says the following, Vayalchut Shloshet Yamim Bamidbar Velo Matsumayim. See the heading by Yechuv Shalosh Yamim Im Chafbet, Pasuk Chafbet? I'll read it. Mm-hmm. There are two paragraphs. See Pasuk Chafbet in Kriyakar? Second one, by Yechuv Shalosh Yamim. Midah keneged midah. Midah keneged midah means they deserved it. Why? Lefi she'asku bebizat hayam hayoter miharaui. They wanted the money too much. Like you said, it was like not appropriate. And from that point, hayu bilti ruuyim lekabel haTorah shenim shel alamayim. And because of that, they were not ready to receive the Torah, which is like water. Al ken ne'enshu, therefore they were punished, b'mash shelo matzumayim, that they couldn't find water. Okay? And he says, they were like, they should have said, let's go run, let's go get the Torah. Moshe wanted them to get the Torah. He had told them, you're not going out for nothing. But instead of going to get the Torah, they saw the money. They ran after the money, and now we have to fix the problem. So how do you fix the problem? You fix the problem with Marak. Okay, skip to now Chaf Gimel, the second paragraph. Ubi Ura Inyan. He says, what's the whole idea of this bitterness? What's the whole notion of the bitterness? Shehat Torah Tchilata Mara. Torah, at the beginning, is bitter. I don't think we talk about it. Nobody talks about it. When you create Tushia, it's called Tushia, Shemeteshet Kocho Shel Adam. It weakens a person. Chazal Amru, the rabbi said, Lama Nimshala HaTorah LeZayit. The Torah is compared to Zayit, to olives. Why? Ma Zayit Tchilato Mar Besafo Matok. Right? Zayit starts out bitter and ends up sweet. Ah Divrei Torah Ken. What?
Olives.
Olives are bitter. You ever pick an olive?
Yeah.
You cannot eat it.
I know. I just tried to.
What? You can't. It's not.
It dries your mouth.
It's inedible. When you let them ripen over time and you crush it into oil, it's edible. It's not, yeah.
And sweet. Olives.
Is it sweet? It's a sweetness. It's a certain taste.
Okay.
I don't like olive oil, but okay, nonetheless.
But that's part of
it's the healthiest. I know. I'm sorry.
This sweet doesn't belong.
But the mitzvot, he says, mitzvot themselves, gamke lav lehanot nitnu. The mitzvot are not for your own benefit. And we don't talk about this. We live in a world where, like, you know, and all. We live in a world where people are not looking for hard work. They're looking for pleasure. They're looking for.
Not even brownie.
No, they're looking for immediate results.
Something that's beneficial to them.
You're right. I work actually in Yerushalayim with the. One of the things I do with the Kola fellows is I participate in a program called Ner Le'elet. They're training them for Kiruv. How do you even carve somebody? What are you going to do? You can say, come to our shir. It will be boring and difficult.
But in the long run, 10 years from now.
You know, but let's be honest. The more entertaining and exciting the shir is, the more stories the rabbi tells, the more fascinating it is. What?
The more empty
it is. The less you really grow. And the more dry the shiur is, the more you crack your head over a Rashi and over a Midrash and read the Ramban and struggle and toil until you get the words. Right? It's hard, but you see in the end. I often said, like when I was teaching, being a silly teacher, if the kids liked you during the year, you're in trouble. Because that meant you weren't working them hard. But any teacher that the kids liked during the year, afterwards they looked back and said, we wasted a year. Pretty much any age. Yeah. It was really stupid. But the kids that they toiled, that they worked hard, if the teacher did it properly, at the end of the year, the kids really, really liked them. They appreciated it. They appreciated the hard work.
Maybe a few years later.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Maybe. But a few years later, would you rather have said, I wasted my time during high school? Or, wow, I really worked hard. You know what I mean? And that's the challenge in education now. It's become a popularity contest. You have to cater to the whim of the child as opposed to what's best for the child. And everybody wants instant gratification.
It's be easy
on a platter, them. Making it easy.
It's like the difference between instant chicken soup and the real deal.
100%. I want it right now. Good, you'll have it right now. It'll just be salt and MSG. You want to wait? You'll have real chicken soup. So that's what he says. Torah, mitzvot, lav, lehanot, nitnu. It's not made for you to feel good. It's not for your pleasure, the commandments. It's Judaism is hard. And let's not kid ourselves. It's beautiful and meaningful and whatever. It's not, nobody voluntarily chooses, I'm not going to, you know, we take Shabbat for granted. And there is beauty and spirituality in Shabbat, but you have to buy into it. You have to go into the system, and but it's hard.
Is this the beginning of the process of conversion that we use for converting non-Jews to Jews?
Correct.
Is this the model?
Just all those agree. We say to the convert, we do, like, you want to become Jewish? What, are you crazy?
It's hard work.
Well, we don't say it's hard work. We say it's persecution to be a Jew. Yeah. But we don't tell this to Jews. We don't. You know, like all the, aren't there enough Jews that, you know, we don't tell this to them. And maybe, I wonder, to some degree, are we doing ourselves a disservice? Mm. Because in the long run, what?
Like those that get a little taste of it and turn away, it's often because of that reason. Because
it's too hard or because it's not meaningful?
Yeah, like having grown up, my teenage years in New Zealand, uh-huh. in Vancouver. So the kids that were okay with it being hard and had a little bit of patience ended up being, at least, if not religious, but on some level of observance where you could see that there was continuity. The kids that just wanted fun and you kind of pretend it was fun just turned around and said it's too hard, and that was the truth.
So interesting, because one of the huge, huge burning topics in this Kira program that I'm running is the question of to what degree is it appropriate to draw somebody in with fun, which is to some degree dishonest, in order to help them become firm later on. And a classic example is NCSY. Has anybody ever here been into an NCSY Shabbaton? Great. They don't really tackle real issues. They don't do serious learning. Especially, like, have you ever been to a Saturday night Havdalah, you know, NCSY? You've never been there? It's an experience. It's a mosh pit. It's drawing on emotions. It's very powerful. Kids love it. But is that real Judaism? Not really. Really, it's not.
It gives a ton. It's a flavor.
Okay.
You
should tell the Jewish people, Dvarim Kashim Kegidin. Tell them harsh things. Ki chole hanefesh kemo chole haguf. Sickness of the spirit is like sickness of the body. Ki kemo shirov chole haguf darkam lehitrapot ayde lekichat asavim marim. Don't get me wrong, but when you're sick, nobody likes the medicine. Right? It hurts. It's painful. Well, they try not to now, but you know what I'm saying? It's not pleasant. Getting well is not pleasant. But if you don't, let's say you don't trust your doctor, you think he's a quack. Well, you can here, take this. You know, it doesn't taste good. It's terrible. I'm going to take this. Kach b'chole hanefashot shehayu cholim ayidei kniyat emunot ra'ot shekanu b'mitzrayim. They had a sickness of faith. They acquired inappropriate values. They acquired spiritually detrimental values. How do you undo spiritually detrimental values? Now, it's so interesting. When I was in yeshiva, I had a Ram, an excellent educator, I think. Whenever we would ask a question in the Gemara, so he would always say, you know, he had a good question, he would say, wow, it's a really interesting question. What do you think the answer is? And we hated it. We hated it.
That's exactly what we said.
If I knew the answer, what do you think I'm asking you for? What are you here for? And half the shiur dropped out. And switched shiurim. And we were going to drop, and a group of us were going to drop out. We had a long talk. And he said, well, you think I don't know the answer? So, but what do you gain by me telling you the answer? My goal here isn't to give you information, it's to give you skills. And we stuck it out. He taught me more than anybody else. More than anybody else. But there's that period of frustration. I don't know the answer. What do you want from me? There's a period of struggle that you have to go through. And anything in life. In order to really gain. And such a beautiful power of the mara. And I think also as parents, we sometimes want to give our child the sweetness. But in reality, the thing that's going to make them grow is to get them to slog through the struggle. It's hard. Of course it's hard. Do it anyway. You know what I'm saying? And then to point out the achievement afterwards. You know, I'm so proud that you really worked hard on that. Look how you accomplished. And give them a taste of that sweetness of the bitter on the bitter. And that's how you really grow. It's a very powerful lesson for us. Sham sam lo chok mishpat. How is Torah given to us? Hard work. You want to become spiritual people? You want to grow close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's not going to be through a 30-minute Kabbalah class and you know, non-spirituality and fakeness and feel good.
Spring.
What?
And a red spring.
And between you and me, good rabbis telling funny jokes. You know, it might be fun, might be nice, but that's not real Judaism. And the tragedy of the world in which we live is that's really what sells today. Right? Hard work doesn't, I mean, I don't know if it ever sold, but especially today, it doesn't sell at all.
And that's why I think there are so many youth that are going off the derech, because it is too hard for them. So we need a way to...
What does that mean, too hard?
They don't want to it's too hard. Being Jewish for them is too hard.
It all depends on
my experience working with kids of this age, that what speaks to them, instead of trying to show them that, but it's meaningful and it's this, somebody needs to admit to them, yeah, it's really stinking hard, of course it is, but nobody says those words to them to say, I know that it
because they're attracted to authenticity. They're attracted to authenticity. I was so interesting yesterday. We did an in service for Sherut Lumi. One of the girls came out and said, wow, I love that he says it like it is. You know what I'm saying? That there's a sense of honesty. If you can give them a taste of our dedication to children, of our devotion, and our appreciation that the hard work is meaningful. Kids do resonate with that. Yeah, of course, on some level, they want it easy. But they also understand intuitively that they want meaning, and they want something true.
I think this is like art works with kids. Like you said, what's so hard for him, like because he has this kids with really amazing spiritual questions, like really, really incredible questions, but he's competing with an iPod.
Right.
And so he said, like, it's not that these kids don't mind the hard work. They would probably be, but if someone could switch off the iPod, like, if they could just have 5 minutes where they thought about what they really wanted,
right,
they would go for the hard work. Because these are, like, kids with really tough questions. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they've asked the question,
and they turn off. Right.
So, like,
okay, I want to finish with one last Rashi. Okay, what does it mean that God is our rofe? Because I am Hashem, your doctor. So in simple understanding, a rofe... What? What's a rofe? A doctor or a healer? You can say healer, okay? But a healer is after the person is sick. Right? Why do you need a healer? When you're sick, you go to the doctor. You go to the healer. So Rashi says something different. He says, l'fip shuto. According to the simple understanding, it's the last Rashi on Pasuk Chavav. The end of the Rashi. Ani Hashem Rofecha, what does it mean? I am Hashem, your healer. Umelamdecha Torah umitzvot, l'man tenatzel mehem. I teach you Torah and mitzvah, so you should be saved from them. Kerofe hazeha umer la'adam. It's like the doctor who says to a person, Al tochal dvarim shemachzibim u'chalidei choli. Don't eat things that make you sick. V'zeu izun mitzvot. Rashi says, look at the language. V'ha'azanta l'mitzvotav. Hazanta literally means to listen. But izun, what's the word izun mean? Anybody know what izun?
Balance.
The balance of mitzvot. V'cheinu omer, rifa'oti l'sarecha, I don't know that passage. Meaning what? Sometimes the best doctor is the doctor that's proactive, that offers a program that you see your doctor regularly, the doctor monitors, what are you eating? You know what I'm saying? Are you exercising enough? Right? The doctor that gives you the instructions in order to prevent you from becoming sick in the first place. That's real medicine. I'm talking about American healthcare system.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Right. In China, you own the doctor. If you got sick, your healer didn't get paid.
Yeah, Rambam talks about the way they behave. Of course, you know, the healthy way of living. But the best doctor, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the goal of the Torah isn't that you get sick and then you get better. The goal of the Torah is that when you follow the, and this comes back to originally, like they were on such a high, but the highs, they're not lasting. Right? The goal is to be on a program of balance, on a program of spiritual nourishment that's ongoing. Right? And that includes hard work and struggle and toil. Because that toil, the bitterness, brings true sweetness, not sugar sweetness. And that brings meaning to our lives. And Hashem Rofecha, Hashem says, that's the lesson of Mara. Start on these mitzvot. Shabbat is not easy. You know, dinim are not easy. Start on them. Understand. What a beautiful lesson to the Jewish people. What a way of drawing them in. You see the sweetness that comes from the bitter? understand this is what Torah is really all about. It's not about Kriyat Yamsu. It's not about seeing God and then running after the money. It's about doing the hard work that's going to make you into a spiritual people. And there's a lot of, such a powerful lesson for all of us. You know, we sometimes forget. It is hard. It's hard to get up to minyan in the morning. It's hard to come to the shiur. It's hard to find meaning. It's hard to spend time davening. Right? Okay, so instead of saying it's hard, I don't want to do it, say it's hard, and I appreciate the hardness, and afal pikin, I'm going to do it anyway. Because when you do it, that really brings growth and meaning. We'll stop here.